Is there a sleepy, grumpy child in your life? Well, if the answer is yes, you're not alone. Sleep problems are common in childhood. Physicians and psychologists estimate that as many as 30% of children may have a sleep disorder at some point during childhood. And these do not simply represent a disruption for the family. They affect the child directly and can lead to social-emotional problems like moodiness and problems in school as well. So how do these disruptions in normal sleep patterns affect children and teenagers? And what can be done about them? Joining us this morning to help us understand this problem is Dr. Safir Sultan, Associate Professor of Pediatrics, specializing in pediatric pulmonary medicine, and he's the director of the Pediatric Sleep Center at Upstate Medical University and the Golisano Children's Hospital. Welcome, Dr. Sultan.
Good morning.
So glad to have you here. So let's talk first at the early stages, especially in the early stages of life, infants and children will have all kinds of sleep patterns. You know, you talk about the colicky baby, you talk about just general difficulties with sleep. Some can be very disruptive and difficult to the family. Help us understand, how do we tell when a child has a true sleep disorder?
Well, I would like to educate the public about what good sleep means. Since your question is about early on with infants. Infants sleep is still irregular. They don't have the circadian rhythm established yet. So in the beginning, it's kind of hard to tell. In the beginning, usually there is no problem, but we want the parents to help and the infant to establish normal pattern of sleep. So the first 6 months of life, it's acceptable that the infant sleep in the nighttime and wake up in the daytime, but we wanna shepherd the infant toward establishing the circadian rhythm. So we wanted the public to be aware that from early on, kind of establishing the circadian rhythm of infants by kind of keeping the house quiet and dark in the night for infant to kind of set the clock that the nighttime is time for sleep and daytime is time to wake up, make some noises and play with the newborn and infant in the daytime. All that will establish the normal and internal clock for infant
and
development. And then we'll go into hopefully healthy sleep. Now, to answer your question exactly, after the first year of life, when problem start is usually the parent will know it. This is the time when the parent expect that the toddler should sleep at night. And when the toddler is not sleeping at night, then they know there is something wrong. So we will start first by helping the toddler learn how to sleep. And then if something wrong happened, then basically to answer your question, they don't sleep well at night. They keep waking up at night asking for the parents. And here we go. We have the first problem, which we see in toddler on, which is what we call sleep onset association insomnia. These are the toddlers who didn't learn how to sleep on their own. They kind of have their first year or first year and a half of their life using the parents to help them fall asleep. They use the parents by either rocking them, hugging them, giving them the bottle, rubbing on their back. And then when the parents' expectations start when they are 1.5 years of age, that now you should sleep on their own. Well, that toddler didn't learn how to sleep on their own. They always need the parents. So the parents usually compromise in the beginning in the night, and early in the night, and stay with the child and help them sleep. But then all of us, including children, wake up in the night. Now the children who learned how to sleep on their own, they just fall back to sleep. Those who didn't learn how to fall asleep on their own, they cry and scream in the night asking for the parent to go back. So then the parent would know that there is a problem.
But you're suggesting, let me go back to two quick things.
Yeah.
You mentioned a number of times circadian rhythm.
Yeah.
That's our natural internal clock.
Yes.
And that's something that needs to be established in the first year of life,
yes,
as you mentioned.
Yeah.
And theoretically, if that does become established correctly, uh-huh, there should not be any real problems,
yeah,
with sleep.
Yeah.
But now you're suggesting that it's almost behaviorally determined. In other words, by reinforcing certain poor behaviors on the part of the child, these kinds of sleep disturbances develop. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. So there is a circadian rhythm part, the internally established clock, and also there is a behavioral, that how to teach the child of the sleeping and their own. Yeah.
So what is a, just to, as a sidebar here, what do you expect in normal, what's healthy amount of sleep at different ages?
Well, it varies in different ages. It's basically the infants, usually they should get at least 16 hours of sleep in a 24-hour period. After the first year of life, like between the first year until 5 years of age, we have a nighttime sleep and daytime sleep. Now we have differentiation. The infants, there won't be any differentiation. They sleep in a daytime, nighttime, and they get the 16 hours. Afterward, we're going to have a nighttime sleep of 10 hours, and we have naps, which varies between 2 hours and the first, between the first year and third year of life, and then it shortened to 1 hour between third and fourth and fifth year of life. And then after 5 years of life, there shouldn't be any naps. There should be only the 10 hour of nighttime sleep.
So as much as 10 hours for
for younger children. Yeah, for school age.
And how about adolescents and
adolescents, it decreased a little bit by 9 hours. And here, actually, this is a little bit of misconception that a lot of us think that adolescent doesn't need too much sleep. And this idea also adolescent have, that they don't need much sleep and they need just 5-6 hours. And that's not true. Truly is that adolescent need to have at least 9 hours of sleep.
I think that's a key point that you're making, because there's also something in our culture that suggests that if you need less sleep, you're a more alert, powerful, strong, successful person.
Yeah.
And I think that's been, throughout our culture, has been touted as a sign of, you know, success in a way.
Not to sleep. No, studies have shown the contrary to that. The less sleep we have, the poorer the cognitive function we have, and actually the poorer perception we have about our needs of our body and our situation is.
Well, I'm going to ask you to hold that thought, because we want to come back and talk specifically about that kind of thing. We have to take a short break. We'll be right back with Dr. Sultan to talk about sleep problems. Stay right there. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio, 106.9 and 570 WSYR. Welcome back to HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen with Dr. Safir Sultan, pediatric pulmonologist and specialist in sleep disorders in children. Well, before the break, we were talking about the kinds of things that, first of all, how much sleep we really do need, and you made the key point that most of us need 9 hours, and clearly none of us are getting it. I think America is sleep-deprived in general. But we talked about how these kinds of things evolve. Help us understand, though, you were mentioning that behaviorally, we can kind of affect the way a child learns about sleep. But over time, are there other things that can contribute to sleep disorders at different ages, and what are they?
Yeah, so the most common problem in or problems in younger age, in like elementary school and middle school, or let's call it disorders now, we have behavioral problem. And these are the elementary school age children and middle school age children, again, who didn't learn how to sleep on their own. They do develop insomnia. They do present to the parents by resistance to sleep. When it's sleep time, they resist. They have a lot of curtain calls. They keep coming out of the bedrooms, stalling, refusing to sleep, making all different excuses. And again, they are expressing the need for the parents' presence.
So you think this is, in most cases, behavioral, and you don't think there are, let's say, some kind of biologic or other disease entities that are creating this?
Well, most of the time, it is behavioral. However, if I want to list the second most common problem in this age group, which is obstructive sleep apnea, yes, indeed, some of them who do have obstructive sleep apnea, and they do snore and gasp for air, they kind of like afraid to sleep, and they kind of resist to sleep, and they may present by bedtime resistance. But back to bedtime resistance, so again, this is enforcing the rules, enforcing what we call limit setting from the parent. So it's a behavioral therapy for this problem, and it is a problem indeed. It's a problem that some children do not get enough sleep, and therefore next day they don't perform well at school. Resolving this problem, it's in the parents' hands by limit setting, enforcing the good behavior of kids, enforcing the rules that staying in the bedroom, not to go out, and enforcing good sleep hygiene. And usually that's solves the problem. Now, when the kid has organic problem, when they do have big tonsils and adenoids, then they do snores, and snoring sometimes is associated with apnea. When apnea means that the kid either stop breathing or they don't breathe, forcefully enough to keep the oxygen in their body at enough level, that will make them develop arousals. The brain will give them signal to wake up to breathe. Frequent arousals at night because of snoring and apnea will lead to poor sleep quality. And next day, the children will present as having learning difficulties, attention deficit, hyperactivities. Kids who don't get enough sleep as compared to adult, they present the hypersleepiness status or sleep-deprived status by being hyperactive, not like us adult by complaining that I'm tired, I'm sleepy.
The opposite.
They just, ironically, they just present as very hyperactive kids.
So now you're talking now mostly about the school-age kid,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Well, what are some of the causes in adolescents, for example, of sleep problems?
Adolescents, they can still develop sleep apnea, but usually the lymph tissue in our body, the tonsils, the adenoid, kind of regress in size toward adolescent age group. So the sleep apnea in adolescents can be due to big tonsils and adenoid in some cases, but now we have the epidemic of obesity. And obesity can lead to, again, sleep apnea because of having very wide neck around the area where we breathe. And that usually press on our airway, on the air passage where we should breathe while we'll sleep, and will make it narrow. And that will cause sleep apnea. So adolescent can get sleep apnea too, which manifests the same by snoring, frequent arousals at night. Now, adolescents usually tell you they don't present by hyperactivity in the daytime. They present by sleepiness, by difficulty to wake them up in the morning, by taking nap. If you remember, we said after 5 years, and I want to emphasize this point, after 5 years, kids should not be taking any naps. So parents of young age children, elementary school children, middle school children, adolescents who observe the kids taking naps, that should alert them there is a problem. And that to answer your first question, how do people know there's a problem? Just nap, indicating there is some problem.
That's interesting. What other factors can contribute to adolescence, though? I mean, besides the fact that we mentioned early on that there's this culture of, you know, don't mm-hmm. sleep because it means you're a slacker mm-hmm. or something. Are there other things like caffeine drinks or, other things that keep teens in this cycle of perhaps, you know,
yes.
sleep deprivation and that kind
Absolutely.
Of thing?
Absolutely. So this is all of back to sleep hygiene. Sleep hygiene is that we need the teens to be aware of importance, as we said, of 9 hours of sleep and good sleep hygiene. Lack of sleep hygiene and good sleep hygiene and lack of adequate sleep will lead in the following day to cognitive impairments. Sleep is needed for teens to perform well at school. They need sleep to have good abstract thinking, to have ability to be creative, to remember what they learned, to react quickly, to organize their thoughts. Where they don't get enough sleep because of poor sleep hygiene, and let's name it, what make them have poor sleep hygiene. First of all, consuming a lot of caffeine-contained food and beverages. Misconception that I drink more coffee, I don't need sleep, I'm fine. And these are in the power beverages and in the Coke and Pepsi and coffee. Number two is also, again, the misconception that I can stay late, I can sleep less, I don't need that. No, they need to sleep 9 hours overnight. Using electronics. Now, we talked a little bit about the clock and how to set the clock, and we said in infants, it starts with infant, and I mentioned something about the light. Our internal clock, which organizes our sleep, is set based on the light. So it knows that there is it's daytime now by seeing the light. Their signal goes from our retina, from our eyes, into the brain, into that clock in particular. So staying at night, utilizing computer or utilizing computer games, these or TV or watching TV, these emit lights, which are actually powerful lights, which tell our clock that it's still daytime. It's not time to sleep. And that will lead to the adolescent clock kind of shifted toward later time of sleep. It's kind of, instead of, it's kind of tell us that it's time to sleep around 10 p.m., it's kind of, it gets shifted toward delayed time, toward 12 midnight, because this is the way the message came to it, that it's not time to sleep yet. So sleeping at midnight and then waking up early morning to school at 6 o'clock in the morning, that will give adolescent only 6 hours.
Besides that, I read somewhere that having sleep deprivation, especially in adolescence, is almost like having some kind of a brain disorder, like encephalopathy or something, because your brain is definitely functioning at a much lower capacity.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And then you worry about teens driving and the potential for driving accidents and all. I mean, forget about drinking and driving; just the fact that they're sleep deprived.
Yes, absolutely. This is there are studies which were done on people who are sleep deprived. They were asked to sit on simulator to kind of drive a car and keep the car in lane and keep this speed steady. They didn't do well when they didn't, the people who didn't have enough sleep. These were actually more than adolescent. They were in actually late adolescence. They were residents, actually, medical residents.
That sounds very familiar.
Yeah, who didn't have
enough sleep.
They had a lot of incidents when they didn't keep the car in lane.
Let alone taking care of patients.
Yeah, there are states which try to help adolescents, and that will bring us, I don't know if we're going to talk about this, that how can we help adolescents sleep?
Let's get to that really quickly, because we're kind of running out of time. So what, very quickly, parents should be setting limits, having some kind of control at any age. Well, before we do that, though, if you think you have a child who has a sleep disorder, what do you do? Where do you go? Let's say apart from, where can you go for help?
Well, you can go to your general practitioner. You can go, you can read information on the internet about good and adequate sleep and about good sleep hygiene.
How about going to your sleep center?
Or if they feel that there is a problem, indeed, they can come to our sleep center. We have a sleep center. We established sleep center at Upstate Medical University. In fact, it is the only pediatric sleep center in central New York area. We're gonna have two sleep specialists, and we are kind of unique that we have also pediatric sleep psychologist as a part of the team. And we have a sleep lab linked to the sleep center. Sleep lab is when we do sleep studies, when we ask the kids to sleep under our observation. And we kind of observe them, observe them to know the problem. So we do have sleep lab and we do have the sleep center, and they can get referred to our center by the pediatrician.
And there they would be tested, and they would find out if it was apnea versus just a behavioral issue, that
yes,
kind of thing.
Absolutely.
And you could figure out if a kid was maybe more hyperactive, that maybe it was a sleep disorder behind it.
Yeah.
Okay. So very, very quickly, sleep hygiene, what does it mean?
Well, sleep hygiene is like just ensuring good quality of sleep, ensuring the adequate sleep hours and ensuring adequate sleep. So basically, it starts from infancy. Parents' role to enforce the nighttime sleep and daytime being awake. Enforce limit setting. Enforcing that the bedtime is not the time for playing on the computer or doing computer games or watching TV.
We have so much to talk about. Perhaps we will have you come back and we'll talk even more about it. But this, because it's a very important topic. Dr. Safir Sultan, Associate Professor of Pediatrics and Director of Pediatric Sleep Center at Upstate Medical University. Hey, thanks so much. I mean, there's just so much.
You're welcome.
And I think it's not a recognized, significantly enough recognized problem for children all through the age range. So I think it would be very important to talk more about that. Well, we have to take another short break, but there's more HealthLink on air ahead. So stay with us. I'm Linda Cohen. This is FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR.